Many of you who are married or understand relationships understand the phrase silent treatment. Got a good audience, the man and his wife, that's where they were. Silent treatment. Suddenly he realized that he had to wake up the next morning at 5 a.m. and wanted her to wake him up, but didn't want to break the silence to catch his flight, so he just decided to write a note. So he wrote a note that said, "Please wake me up at 5 a.m. Put it where she'd be sure to find it. Next morning, the man wakes up. Well, it's not 5 a.m. It's 9 o'clock. Beside the note, he has this. The paper says, "It's 5 o'clock. It's time to wake up." I just love how this particular article signed off, though. It said, you know, men just aren't equipped for this kind of contest. They lose every time. He said, God may have made men first, but there's always a rough draft before the masterpiece. All right, here's what I know. I know that God's got more for you and he's got more for me. Yes? I know he's not through with me yet, and I'm not totally in my promised land. There's more things that he has promised, that things are in his mind, than I have yet to obtain. So I know there's more. And so we're on the journey, very much like these guys, onto the promised land. And God shows up in this Exodus, the story we're in, and we're going to finally get to the plagues today. But he shows up to set his people free. But not only that. There's three reasons. Somebody may ask you at some point, why did God use the plagues in Exodus? And I want you to be able to give them answers. Give them three answers. The first one is this. God did the plagues because he wanted the Egyptians to know that he was God. Look at Exodus 7:5. And the Egyptians, say it with me, and the Egyptians, what? Shall know that, what? That's the one of the reasons he showed up. The second reason he showed up was this. Is that you and your children may know that I'm God. Israelites, you will know it, and you will be able to tell this story. Look at Exodus 10:2. All right, read it with me. And that you may tell in the hearing of who? Your sons and your sons. The mighty things that I have done in Egypt. You know, it's important what you see and what you pass on. I mean, it really is. The stories and what you see and how you set life up. By setting up, I don't mean you do it, but I mean you use it to pass on stories, to pass on things that God has done. And then the third reason is this, is that the gods of Egypt will know. Look at Exodus 12:12. For I will pass through the land of Egypt on that night, and I will strike the firstborn of the land of Egypt, both the man and the beast, and against, say it with me, against all of Egypt, I will do what? So God is executing judgment on the gods of Israel. Why? So they will know. This is God against the gods. This is the war of the gods. And what's interesting in this whole process is this little phrase. I feel like I need to give you a little explanation of it, because he told Moses in Exodus 3 when we were there at the burning bush, that I'm going to harden Pharaoh's heart. And so you're going to go in, and he says, take the staff, throw it down, do the miracle I'm going to show you that God did by the bush. Do the other miracles. You put your hand under your coat, it comes out leprous. Do that. Show the children of Israel that one. And then I want you to pour the thing on the ground and let it become blood. Tell them this is what's coming. And so in telling all that, then he says, but you need to know. Pharaoh will not let him go because I'm going to harden his heart. Now, let me ask you a question. Do you believe in free will, that God gives you a choice, or that God steps in and he's the one who does it? Did God harden his heart? Let's take a look and see how that works out based on that word you'll find in the Hebrew. I'm going to ask Eddie to come up and give me a hand, because that word harden, there's two definitions to it. Same word, two definitions, all right? One of the definitions of that word is that it means strengthen. I will strengthen you. The other side of that same word that's used there is I will make you make it hard or heavy. It's kind of like I suppose a heart that's alive and beating and well and it's doing good. The harder it gets, the heavier it gets. Now here's the translation of what that means. God is saying, Pharaoh, I would like for you to journey with me. You know, here's what possibly could happen. You're the first nation like this in the history of the world. You're polytheistic, so there's all kind of gods y'all worship, and I'm here to show you I'm the only one God. I'd love for you, Pharaoh, to come along with me and learn this lesson so that now Egypt could actually become the nation who believes this, understands this truth. But if you don't cooperate, how many of your mom and dads were ever like this? But if you don't cooperate, I'm going to do it with or without you. It's happening. So Pharaoh, make it easy on yourself. And here's how that looks. What I will do is this will be your heart. And when one of these plagues come down, I will pour a little water on your heart. And then as the stress of the plague and the hardness happens, then what is in your heart will come out. If you want to soften it and do the right thing, then that's what will come out of your heart. But if inside the unbelief is still there, and if you want to quit because it's hard times, or if you just want the judgments to stop, or for any other reason, then what I will do is I will pour more on your heart. And then what this will do is this will pull your stubbornness out instead of your cooperation. When I pull like this, the stress of the plague, the hardness of the people, that if what's in your heart is stubbornness and you get resentful, then I am going to strengthen your resolve to be resentful, to be stubborn. Does that make sense, everybody? I won't do it, but I will pour onto your heart what will cause what is in your heart to come out. That's what that phrase means. Thank you, Edward. Good job. Here. Don't harden your heart. So, you have to get the setting. He deals with Moses. These three things, do them. Go show to the children of Israel. Snake. And they do all that. The children, they're excited to no end. And I'll tell you more why in just a moment. But now they go to Pharaoh's court, throws the staff down. It becomes a snake. And so then the magicians, what happens next? Huh? David Copperfield shows up. Now, pause just for a second. I don't want to go into this in detail, but what was that? The Bible calls them magicians. He calls them wizards. So was this actually a miracle happening, or was this sleight of hand? I personally think it's both, and I'll tell you why before everything's over. I think it's both. Because it was the battle of the gods. And there is... In Corinthians, it tells us how they used to worship in these idols where people would come bow and worship. Demons would come and get up in those idols. And then people actually would be worshiping demonic forces. And what people don't quite understand at this stage of time, at this point, do you know that many, when Moses came along, that a lot of the Egyptian stuff had been built. I mean, it was old hat. I mean, he saw the pyramids. They knew. There were over 80 deities that had huge shrines to them that was so incredibly impressive. They had religions that were developed more fully than Judaism or Christianity is today. That's how much they were in place. I mean, you talk about pomp and circumstance and impressiveness. You talk about Egypt. It was a first nation in the history of the world like that, and the most powerful. And it was set up where the government was working well with the Pharaoh, where the religious system was working well, and also where the economy was working well. So all of them working together and building strength. And now you have, in the heart of this, you have these slaves who we think, when we think they're Hebrew slaves, and they have the whole history of the slave. The more I study it, the more I get the picture. I mean, we're a country just a few hundred years old. And right now, if you took a poll of Bible believing across this country, do you know it would be the minority and not the majority? And beyond, I mean, this is just a few hundred years of decline where we're going. How many of you see a decline where we're going in the future? You see a decline? This had been 430 years. Some of them, the name Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob was they didn't know it. They'd heard it. It was like folklore somewhere. They were not a people like we would think they were a close people. They were a people who had seen and mostly was impressed with the gods of Egypt. Now, if you would go to school and take a course in this subject, it was just one of the ones I just had a ball with when I was in school. But if you took a course, do you know the average, both Jewish and Christian, theological centers would teach you that this didn't really happen? That what we're about to talk to you about today, about the plagues, did not really happen. That it is, in fact, a folklore or it's mythology. It didn't happen. That's what they would teach you. Or they would teach you that it was a natural phenomenon that happened every year, but this year it just happened to be a larger one than the real one. I mean, this was just a bad year. We always have rain, yes? But this was just a bad year of rain, okay? That would be the second possibility. Or I could teach you what I believe, and that is that it actually happened. Well, Mike, how could I even believe that didn't happen? Well, just real quick. Nile River starts some 4,000 more than 4,000 miles and begins its journey down. So every single year, as the snow melts, about in May, when May comes around, guess what comes down the Nile River? All the water from the snow melt. Every single year, like clockwork, in June, it becomes more dormant. And they even have some microorganisms that settle over it that gives the Nile a red tint. July comes along, the standing water now is out. And every time when you have standing water, what starts to pool around in standing water? Tadpoles. And what comes next? So all that's just a natural phenomenon. You can see that mid-January, they get a rainy season. And when it rains sometimes, if everything is just right, it hails. Just now, February comes around, everything gets green, and all of a sudden you have the locusts come in, and now March, the winds begin to blow, and you have March sandstorms. And April, you have the Passover, which is the death of the first, but just there it goes. Just natural. The human mind so much wants to get rid of the miraculous. But let me just ask you a question. Suppose we're in that classroom, I just said that to you. What would you say back? Let me give you five things to say back, okay? Here's what you asked that professor. Number one, I mean, I can understand intensity. But by the time the Israelites left the country, there was nothing left. I mean, Egypt was gone. You're not talking about intensity. You're talking about piece by piece dissolved. Or you could ask the professor, okay, look at this. Moses goes out. He says, all right, we're going to have darkness today. Plague of darkness is going to come. Oh, by the way, it's going to be on you right here, but not on you. You're the Israelites. You're Egypt. You're dark. You're not. How do you do that? How do you divide it up? All right, same thing with the other plague. It's going to happen here and happen there. Your cattle is going to die. Yeah. But let's make it modern day. Your dog is going to die. Cat. Wake up in the morning, they're dead. You have me Israelites, you wake up in the morning, you still got the aggravating things. How do you do that? The precision. See, one thing these guys are seeing is that in polytheism, it's always chaotic. It'd be a storm come through. The gods were upset about this or this would happen. But what they begin to see is a God of precision. All right, darkness is going to stop right here. You'll see it when we go through this. All right, you have darkness. Okay, I'm ready for it to go away. Moses, can you make it go away? Sure, when you want it to go away. Here's the dumb thing. If it was darkness or some plague, what do you just say? Now? No, you know what Pharaoh said? Tomorrow. You know what Moses said? All right, tomorrow. Tomorrow, 11:59. No. 11:59, 30 seconds, it's going to go away. And guess what happened? At the right time, precision happened. You don't have other gods who are precise like that. You don't have that kind of powerful God. And so he begins to move. And by the way, there's an increased severity in the plagues. God is working a strategy here. He's pulling in the Egyptians. He's pulling in the Israelites. He's pulling in the gods. He's working this thing according to his plan. And finally, it says, and we read, every one of these plans systematically, he was addressing the gods. First one, biggest one. The actual source of life to Egypt. You know, Egypt's a desert. It's a desert. There's nothing there. Except the Nile. And the Nile is its life stream. So you had several gods. Apis was one of the gods of the Nile. Isis was a god of the Nile. Cumin was one of the gods of the Nile, which was the guardian of the Nile. It actually says that Osiris, the god of the underworld, that the Nile was his bloodstream. So now you have these gods. Every single year it happened. Every single year you tried to please them. Every single year you hoped the water would come down. Every single year this would happen. And all of a sudden one day, one man walks out, Moses, with his brother. Moses is 80. Guess how old Aaron is? 83. Two old men. Two old men carrying a stick. And they tell the Pharaoh, here's what's going to happen. Let's start out with the biggest one. Let's start out with the Nile. Life comes from the Nile, fishing, yes. Crops come from the Nile, irrigation, yes. The Nile is noted for life. Life is supposed to come. One of these gods is the god that is the source of life that comes from the Nile. It covers the life source of the Nile. Walks up, strokes. Blood starts and death starts. One God, many gods. Gods who supposedly bring life cannot stop it. The plague goes until... Can you imagine folks in Egypt going, what's going on? They say this one God and everything that we've trusted in all these temples, surely there's something can happen. And guess what happens? David Copperfield. Now, this is personally just happens to be one of the areas I think that it'd be easy to have a sleight of hand. Here's why I say that. If you have another God who's taking your source of life, turning it into blood, and all the fish and everything else is dying out, would you create the same kind of plague? I mean, would you do the same thing? It seemed like if you had the power to do that, you would do the reverse. Is anybody understanding what I'm saying? I tell you what, if you can do it, turn the blood into... Don't get a glass of the other and somehow fake it and make it think like you're doing the same. If you got real power, use it with the Nile. But at that moment, you feel almost a noose start to slip around. And now the process starts even more so. Because now he moves from the Nile and the death until it astounds me. You got a God that's a frog anyway. But the God Hepku was the God of the frog, the frog god, who was actually over the birthing process for kids. So they'd pray to the God to have a good birth, you know? So they wake up and frogs are everywhere. Now, you know, I thought about this. I thought, would this plague be worse on men or women? Now, it was bad on everybody. But I don't know about you, but my crowd, varmints, they don't sit well with. I mean, if I walk up and there's a frog, I'm cool. You cool? With my crowd, they walk up, they're not cool. If a frog gets on me, I'll take him and throw him off. My crowd, if a frog gets on them, somebody's going to get hurt. And now all of a sudden you wake up. I don't know what you'd do if you had four or five girls. You know, you'd wake up and frogs would be in the bed. Frogs would be in your shoes. You put your nightgown on at night and in your pockets would be frogs. Frogs everywhere. Everywhere. I remember years ago when Dean and I used to work with alcohol and drug abuse, and we stayed in a two-story house. The offices were downstairs, and Dean and I lived upstairs before we had kids. We came home one night, and we were laying in the bed, and Dean looks up and says, "Mike, there's a bird in the house." And there's a bird flying around and around and around. And so I get up, I cut the lights on, but it wasn't a bird. It's a bat. Long story short, we couldn't find out that the chimney had separated enough from the wall until the bats that were in the belfry could come down and get in the house. And so we'd walk in the house, and we learned to spot, and we'd walk in the house, and we'd go, the Doc Spartan corner over there. We were in bed one night. All of a sudden, this thing started happening. So I get up. I get me a broom. And I feel like I'm back on the ball team, you know. I could hit fairly good, you know. But you know, a curveball is hard to hit, but a bat. I mean, you know, you learn to follow a drop ball a little bit, but a bat. And I mean, I was losing this game because he would go right around it. Just like that, right around it. So I said, I figured it up. I said, okay. So I'm about to expand my surface so that in his moves, I'm ahead of him, yes? So I get my tennis racket. Dean's up under the cover. I'm standing there in my underwear on top of the bed with my tennis racket. And Dean is doing the song about Batman. Na 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 Batman. Well, that bat comes, and it was just like the perfect serve. That bat comes, and I stroked that bat. He went up against that wall and fell dead. I'm not feeling your pain. I just want you to know that. So I go get some toilet tissue, you know, where I don't have to touch the bat, and bats have disease, and I picked him up, went and put him in the commode and flushed him down the commode, got back in bed. Yeah, hero. Victory, yes. I don't know what time of the night it was when Dean got up and had to go to the bathroom. But two things had not happened. One is that bat wasn't dead. Second thing happened is that bat wasn't flushed. So when Dean sits down on the unflushed bat that was still alive, got a flutter. That bat started flapping his wings and I come up. All of a sudden I hear a yell from the bathroom. I get up and I run and she's running in place. The bat is not dead. The bat is not dead. I said, flush him again. We finally got the bat problem fixed, just to let you know. Moses, make the frogs go away. Be careful what you ask for. All right, what time you want to go away? This precision God thing is going on. This war against this politics. I mean, you want him gone? Tell me when you want him gone, and I'll tell you exactly when. And you know what he said? Tomorrow. Can you imagine walking home with a favorite rock and saying, what are you thinking? It could have been gone now. So sure enough, the next day, when he said it, every frog died. So now that night, when you got in bed, no frogs jumped on you. They were dead and smelly in your bed. They were dead and smelly in your shoes. You couldn't even find them until you could smell them. They stacked them in heaves and built fires. The God of a birth, your defeat. Quick tie-in. Because you need to understand this to understand the story. You remember back at the burning bush when he said, I want you to do these signs, throw the stick down, put the hand in. You remember that? All right, and then pour stuff on the ground, it's going to be blood. I want you to go back and do those three signs for the children of Israel. Because they need to start believing again in me. And so we're going to do this, and that's going to help them start believing. So do that for them. And then once you do it for them, they're going to get all excited about it. I want you to do it at Pharaoh's court. But I want you to hear a message. It's a hidden message in those three plagues. You remember in chapter 1 of Exodus when they got concerned because the children of Israel were multiplying so much? The word that's used there is that they said they've become so numerous until they overcome us and they're just multiplying. And the word that's used there is the word for like a creepy, crawly creature. For something that slivers like a snake. One of the things where you turn over and turn a rock over and the bugs go everywhere. These people, now we have started demeaning them. And now as slaves, they're going to take another step down and become less than human. It's the way all societies work when they start the pathway not only to slavery, but to genocide. All over the world, Hitler used the same thing. So I started saying, you're not fully human. And it's in the first plague. And said, you throw down and let that thing, that rod, become a snake. And when Pharaoh used those words, I want you to know that I know what he was doing. I want you to know that I understood hundreds of years ago when he started the demeaning that finally grew to the point of murder. I saw the progress. On the top, in the front of Pharaoh would have, on his crown, would have a cobra. He said, you throw this stick down because I want to make sure Pharaoh understands. And I know he thought nobody was powerful enough. He could do whatever he wanted to do. No one would ever see it, but I did. You know, when you take the hand and you stick it, you become leprous. You know what they would do to a leprous person? They would basically take them out of camp and they would live a terrible life by themselves or with someone else that were leprous. That's the reason Miriam, who rebelled against Moses, who was actually Moses' sister, rebelled against the authority of Moses. She got leprosy. And Aaron's prayer was, don't let her not exist anymore as a human. I mean, in other words, don't put her away. And what God was saying through Moses and saying to these children of Israel, he says, I know they have not wanted you to be apart, wanted you to go away. I know they wanted you to put you out of the camp like you didn't belong. But I want you to know that I saw every single time they did that to you. When you were growing up, and you don't think I knew when the demeaning was going on and when the put down was going on, and somebody was trying to make you feel less, I want you to know that I knew and saw every single thing. My people, I know what they were saying about you. And finally, when it comes to the third sign that he sent back to the children of Israel, it's almost like this is like a, it's like some kind of therapy session where somebody finally comes to talk and doesn't think anybody understands and said, you know, this is what happened to me. And the therapist said back something like, oh, that must have really hurt terribly. And it's almost like for the first time you go, how did you know? No one's ever acknowledged that. No, I mean, I thought it was my private pain. And for the first time, somebody says, I understand. That really was hurtful. And before this whole thing starts moving down the road of the plagues, he comes back with these signs and finds the last one, which very well may have been the most painful, and that is this. That when they gave the edict that when a male child was born, you could take him and throw him into the river, the Nile River. That wasn't just to some authority in Egypt. Any Egyptian had the right to take out of the arms of a mom, a Hebrew baby boy, and throw him in the Nile River. And you pour that cup out, and that water becomes blood. Every mom, I want you to know, I saw that when it happened to your son. The Nile's too big to turn red just because a few bodies are in it. But I want you to know that I saw when your baby went in that Nile and it sucked the life out of him. And then I saw the next morning as you woke up, if you had any sleep at all, and you wonder how the day keep going on like it's going on. It's just going on. Nothing has happened. No one understands what just happened to me. And God is sending a very clear message. He says, I understand exactly what was happening to you and what you're going through. And this is a sign. Not only do I understand, but it's a sign that now I'm coming after you. It's a sign. You're mine. And no longer will this go on. Because what I'm about to display is who I am. And I created the whole shebang. And I brought them into this world. And I'm getting ready to take them out. And the glory of God is just getting ready to get displayed. And I'm going to deliver my people. So ladies and gentlemen, the sign is God has never not had his eye on you. He's never known what's going on with you, what's going on with you. And he has more for you in the promised land. For some of you, he's coming to get you. For some of you, he's coming to get you. This is season is your deliverance season. A couple years ago, Sanders did an album. And I've always liked this particular song that she has on this album. And so I asked her if she would sing it for us. So Misty's going to come and sing. But let's worship with her, if you would. All right, here's what I want to do. Let's sing it again. But here's what I want you to do. I want you to get touched in the fact that this is your God we're talking about. This is the God who came for you when you couldn't help yourself. This is the God that the only reason you're standing here is because He's alive. He rescued you. The only reason you're standing beside the person you're standing beside is God. It was God's gift to you. The only reason things are happening like they're happening is because God's on your side and He's fighting for you. There is no other like Him. You are the children of Israel of this day. He is fighting for you. So what I want to do is proclaim in the house and release that concept. But I also want to draw Him into the places where you need to draw Him into Him by faith, saying, God, here's where I need you to fight for me now. Here's where I need you to come right now. This, I need you to deal with this, and let's bring Him in by faith and just declare it. And then there's one other thing I'm going to ask you to do. My friend, Mom knelt down in front of me one time. I came in the middle of the night, and she knelt down in front of me, and she says, Mike, don't push too far. Don't push too far. I understood what she was talking about, because you can push too far. Pharaoh pushed too far. God, you just ask somebody here, if you can find it in your heart, just to say, okay, I'm tired of pushing. I'm just going to surrender to you, God. I'm going to turn my heart loose and let you take control of my life. The fight's over. I give in. You win. I surrender. So whoever and however many need to do that, would you do that during this song as well? Let's sing it together. Okay. Come on, let's sing. Let's just worship around while Misty sings. And we'll sing with her. Great job, Misty. Now, Misty's not on staff. She doesn't get paid here. This is her volunteer gift to the church, and she serves. I am so glad the Lord gave her and Jimmy to us, aren't you? Be a part of this crowd. But I would encourage you, this is the CD she made a couple years ago, and she's going to be out front in the foyer. I'd encourage you to grab a copy. That song is on here, and I'd encourage you to grab a copy of that, go home, and all week long play it and make sure you know that God Almighty is on your side, and He's fighting for you. All right, Mr., go ahead. I can talk. I just bless you as a congregation as we take this journey through Exodus. I bless you with the revelation that a lot of the truth that was happening to those people are happening in your life. And God wants to convey to you the fact that you're His, the fact that He has a plan. He's not through with you yet. He has things He wants to reveal to you. He has a promised land for you. And He just encourages you. Keep the faith. Keep following, one step at a time. I'll keep opening up revelations. I'll keep fighting battles for you. But walk with me, and let's get to the promised land together. Lord bless you. Lord, cause His face to shine upon you as you go. In Jesus' name, amen. Have a wonderful week, everybody.